All right. Well, just briefly, I'm so excited. I got to show you guys what's going on here. Can you see this picture? This is today. This morning we meditated, and then we went for a short hike. Not everybody hikes. Some people just sat by the lake, but these are the hikers. And then later, this is me teaching. Can you see that the mountains and the isn't that nice? And then this is the group, the whole group. We're having a great time. It's summer in La Vida. And we also, look at all the cars in front of the retreat house. And here we are in the church at San Luis. We're having a wonderful time, guys. You just got to come here. Here they are by the resurrection statue at San Luis. You got to come to La Vida while it's summer. You just got to. And now we're going to look at this guy. Nisargadatta Maharaj. And I am going to read from this book today, Consciousness and the Absolute, the Final Talks. And we're going to look at November 17th, 1980. So the question is, don't we have to discard all knowledge? That's the question. Don't we have to discard all knowledge? And Nisargadatta says, you must have a thorough knowledge of this consciousness. And having known everything about the consciousness, you come to the conclusion that it is all unreal. And then it should drop off. Having listened to these talks, sit and meditate. That which I have heard, is it true or not? Then you will understand that this is also to be discarded. The principle which can pass judgment on whether the world is or is not, that principle antedates the world. That by which everything is known, whether it is or is not. Who knows this? I'm just going to read the whole conversation, then we'll go back and look at it. When I say Parabrahman, then you say that you understand. Names are merely an instrument for communicating. Do you understand what I'm driving at? Questioner. The Yanani knows that this is all an illusion, that there is no path. But if, from within the illusion, one is convinced that there is a path and there's somewhere to go, does it make sense to use techniques to get that further illusion? Nisargadatta, illusion. Is it a word or not? Questioner, it's a word that relates to a concept. Nisargadatta, that is also a name only, is it not? Questioner, yes. Nisargadatta, so what illusory word do you want that will satisfy you? Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because I'll tell you the image that's arising in my mind, which I know has nothing to do with this conversation, but it's here, so I'll share it. This almost reminded me of a husband and wife having an argument. You know, kind of like, what do you want me to say? What word will satisfy you? you know, like one person is there wanting something, and the other person's there saying, I can't give it to you, is what I hear. And in fact, one thing that really sticks out at me from this conversation? Is this question, having listened to these talks, sit and meditate. That which I have heard, is it true or not? I mean, maybe Nisargadatta is telling this man, I can't give it to you. Maybe that's why I have that sense of that husband and wife argument where one's asking for something and the other one is saying, I can't give it to you. What do you want me to say? You know? Because this one line, having listened to these talks, sit and meditate, that which I have heard, is it true or not? Well, it reminds me of something that I read Buddha said. Of course, I think, you know, we never know for sure what Buddha said because it was all passed down orally for so long. But somewhere along the way, I heard that Buddha said something like, don't trust me. Yeah, that's a crazy thing for a teacher to say. Usually you would expect a teacher to say, trust me. Don't trust me. And assuming Buddha said that, the reason Buddha would say, don't trust me, is because he's really saying, find out for yourself. You saw that we went hiking today. The one thing happened that was kind of funny. There's this plant here that almost looks like a cactus. You know, we have a lot of cactuses here, and this plant looks kind of like a cactus. It looks like it might have little bitty stickers all over it. And somewhere along the way, don't ask me why I did this, but somewhere along the way, one day I touched one, and they're super soft, you know. And so as we were hiking today, I said, oh, these plants are so fun to touch. They're so soft. And I reached down, and I touched it, and then I walked on. And each and every person that was following me would reach out and touch it. Then afterwards they go, oh, wow, it is soft. And they each did the same thing. And I could tell that they didn't really believe me until they touched it for themselves. And so we had a little brief discussion there about how, you know, they couldn't really believe me. You know, they had to have the direct experience themselves, right? They had to touch the plant themselves and find out how soft it was. Again, I think that's what this conversation is kind of about. I think that Nisargadatta is saying, you know, you have to find out for yourself. Don't trust me. You know, ask yourself, is this true or not? Sit down and meditate. Is this true or not? And it seems like, in a way, I've said something recently in Gentle Healing 3. I asked people to start contemplating maybe in a different way for some of them. I asked them to kind of start experimenting and testing, like, instead of just reading all these quotes that say there is no body, for example, you know, what can you find out to determine if there is or isn't a body? You know, that's a pretty tough inquiry, I understand. But the masters are either all lying to us, or they went through that inquiry themselves. Right? They didn't just believe somebody. They had to have gone through that inquiry themselves and discovered for themselves that there is no world, there is no body. Just like everybody today on the trail had to discover for themselves that that plant is soft. So how do we do that? How do we find out if, I mean, what Nisargadatta is saying here, listen to this. It's not the first time we've listened to this, but listen to this. What Nisargadatta is saying here, the questioner says, don't we have to discard all knowledge? Nisargadatta says, you must have a thorough knowledge of this consciousness. That's step one. First, you have to have a thorough knowledge of this consciousness. And having known everything about the consciousness, you come to the conclusion that it is all unreal. I just want to say that is so far down the path, at least it is to me. First, discover everything you can about the consciousness, everything you can about the I Am Presence, until you are convinced that it is unreal. You know, most of us don't even know what the heck the consciousness is yet, to be honest. So where do we start? How do we do this? And dang it, are we gonna do it? Right? How can we find out for ourselves? Feel free to answer if you have the answer. Go ahead, Ron.
I think it's what Nizar is asking us to do. I mean, he would many times tell people, don't come back. Don't come back until you've meditated on this, until you've thought about it. You know, you've been hearing the same thing over and over and over. And I think it's just through deep self-inquiry in meditation. And I think it's a different experience for everybody, potentially, and what that looks like and how kind of that truth reveals itself. It's almost like a knowingness that emerges in a certain point. Certain things just really click and just becomes real clear. And for me, it's, you know, the challenge is I've gotten the intellectual clicking part of it. I sense there's something a little more that needs to be more deeply integrated. So that's kind of what I sit with, and I don't particularly know what's going to show up, but I just continue to sit with it.
Beautiful. That's a perfect answer. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know what I just heard Ron say, I'm not quite sure where I'm going, but I'm going. Right? Isn't that what he said? Is that what you think he said wrong? Yeah. I'm not quite sure where I'm going, but I'm going.
I know it's better. Okay, that I'm convinced of exactly what that looks like manifests itself. I'm not sure.
Yeah. By the way, somebody sent me a 3-hour video from Bernadette Roberts. I'm looking forward to listening to that. Go ahead, George. I saw your hand.
I just wanted to echo what Ron said. I don't know how to get there from here except to listen to the masters. There's something within me that tells me that they know the path. I mean, why do I want to follow them instead of my Baptist minister?
Yeah.
Or any other religion? Why? I don't know why. All I know is that's what I'm drawn to. And I can only go where I feel led.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, one of the contemplations that's been on my mind for the last week or so, you know, Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, Bernadette Roberts, they seem to be the ones that are strongest for me right now. And especially for me, Ramana Maharshi and Bernadette Roberts, with what I'm about to say, although I love Nisargadatta Maharaj, he does have this kind of crazy look, right? So when I look at Ramana Maharshi and I look at Bernadette Roberts, though, they both look pure, humble, and have nothing to gain. And I can't figure out why in the world they would lie to me. Like, I can't figure out why they would lie. In Nisargadatta, my mind might be able to convince myself that he imagined it. I'm not saying I think that's true, but you know what? You know where I'm going with this, maybe. But with Ramana Maharshi and Bernadette Roberts, I can't figure out why they would lie to me. And so my response to that is, it has to be true. Right? It has to be true, because there's no reason in the world for them to lie to me. They didn't take money from anybody. They were both humble. They didn't seem to have anything to gain. So yeah, I think the answer to the question is exactly what Ron said and exactly what Nisargadatta says. We have to sit and meditate, but we have to ask this question, is it true or not? We have to find out for ourselves. I think that today, when I touched that plant, even though nobody else really understood how soft it was until they touched it, they actually did trust me enough to touch it, right? I mean, they all reached down and touched it for themselves. So that's what we have to do. We have to trust the masters enough to follow their guidance, to touch it, right? But we can't know what they're talking about until we touch it ourselves. So it's not believing them, it's trusting them. And I think that's all I have to say about this particular conversation. So we have some time left, so I'm going to go ahead and reach for this other book, the Nisargadatta Gita. And I am going to open up to quote 10. Quote 10 says, immortality is freedom from the feeling I am. To have that freedom remain in the sense I am. It is simple. It is crude. Yet it works. Now, this is a funny, 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 funny thing. I mean, how often do you tell somebody to become free of alcohol, stick with the alcohol? Right? But that's what he's saying. To become free of the I am, remain in the I am. You know? And I think that this fits perfectly with the conversation we just read. Because in the conversation we just read, he said, you have to have a thorough knowledge of this consciousness. And having known everything about the consciousness, you come to the conclusion that it is all unreal. You know, you have to explore it fully. First you come to know it, then you continue to explore it. And the more you look at some point it dawns on you that, what I want to say is it dawns on you that, holy shit, I'm looking at it. What am I? I mean, my God, I've been sitting here for 3 years looking at consciousness. You know, that has to dawn on you at some point. But I think I showed you guys this recently, but I'm going to show it to you again because I keep it here on my desktop. For a reason. I took this picture off the internet. I am that which knows that I am. You know, most people are at the I am so-and-so, I am this role, I am this quality, right? And so working the way back to I am comes first. To arrive at simply I am is great, I think great progress. But it's not the end of the job. And this is why he says in the conversation, you must have a thorough knowledge of this consciousness. You have to have a thorough knowledge of this I am-ness. And having known everything about the consciousness, you come to the conclusion that it is all unreal. I think that's when you realize that you are that which knows the I am. I am that which knows that I am. It's, you know, so, you know, maybe there's person. Behind person, there's I am. Behind I am, the absolute. So again, this quote says, immortality is freedom from the feeling I am. To have that freedom, remain in the sense I am. You stay there, you stay there, you stay there, you stay there. Until it dawns on you in a very real way that you're the one that sees the I am. It has to be a very real dawning, you understand, not intellectual. He says it's simple. It's crude, yet it works. I have a sense of what the word crude means, but I want to look it up anyway just for the heck of it. It's natural or raw, not processed. Right? It's natural or raw. I looked that up because I was thinking more of the second definition, like it's rudimentary, it's simplistic, it's not difficult math, it's simple math. But the first definition really adds more to it. It's a natural, raw practice. Right? It's just a natural, raw practice. Just pay attention to yourself. It's simple, it's crude, yet it works. Now the commentator says, the feeling I am is dormant at birth. It appears spontaneously, say, around the age of 3. Now apparently this guy didn't have a child. Because those of us who had children know it appears spontaneously around the age of 2. Right? That's why it's called the terrible twos. But anyway, it appears spontaneously, say, around the age of 3. It is the essence of the 5 elements that make up the body, or the food body. The body is a limitation, and as long as the I am identifies itself with the body, there is no chance of freedom, and death is certain. Well, that's a sweet little commentary, but I actually, oh good, it continues. I don't think that's all Nisargadatta is saying here. The next page says, eternity or immortality is possible only when you are free from the I am. For this freedom to accrue, you have to be after the I am, understand it, abide in it, and transcend it. Judging from the enormous amount of spiritual literature available, the understanding, abidance, and transcendence of the I am appears to be too simple and crude a practice, yet it works. Okay, well, that's a nice commentary, but I actually... I don't know, it feels deeper to me to read the quote without the commentary, to be honest. The commentary watered it down a little for me. You know, because it is true that the body is something that we identify with. But when I read the quote, and you guys, if you disagree with me, feel free to say, Regina, I think you're wrong on this, because we're going through this together here, okay? But when I read this, I don't read Nisargadatta telling me to let go of the I am the body. No, I hear him telling me to discover the I am that's already beyond the body and stay with it and explore it until I see that it's false too. Immortality is freedom from the feeling I am. It doesn't say immortality is freedom from the feeling I am the body. Immortality is freedom from the feeling I am. To have that freedom, remain in the sense I am. It is simple, it is crude, yet it works. You know, we were looking at this conversation a moment ago where Nisargadatta said, that which I have heard, is it true or not? Sit and meditate on that question. That which I have heard, is it true or not? So depending on where we are, I think the quote we just read kind of gives us our starting point. I think I asked earlier, where do we start? You know, how do we do this? If you think I am the body, then you start by examining to see if that's true or not. If you think, I am consciousness, I am everything, then you start by examining, is that true or not? Right? If you think I am the body and you examine, is that true? At some point, the shift is going to occur. Oh my gosh, I'm the consciousness watching the body. And when that shift occurs in a very genuine way, you're no longer identified with the body, then you just do the same thing again. Only now, instead of examining the I am body belief to see if that's true, you examine the I am belief to see if that's true. And at some point you realize, oh my gosh, I'm the one looking at consciousness. And in fact, one of the quotes in the Seven Steps to Awakening, again, I'm going to put it in my own language because I don't remember quotes word for word, but the idea is that when you discover that you're the one that sees consciousness, you've gone as far as you can go. And that's from Nisargadatta. So I think we got somewhere in this half hour. I think that we each have a starting point. If you're still identified with the body, find out if that's true. Start there. If you've already transcended the I am the body belief, then start looking at the I am. See if that's what you really are. And you have to do it yourself. No one can do it for you, which is why Nisargadatta sounded like an upset wife or an upset husband in this conversation. So what illusory word do you want that will satisfy you? And with that, I conclude. Thank you, you guys. By the way, Ron, I'm real excited that you're coming in July. We'll see if anybody else comes. If not, we're going to do whatever you want to do. I mean, I know you're coming for meditation and Nisargadatta, but the curriculum will get thrown out the window. All right? Okay.